32 years. The U.S. is saturated with guns and has become a lot more so over the past decades. As deaths mount from gun-related violence in the U.S., so do the sales of firearms. Data from 2020 shows how gun production has increased nearly threefold over the past 20 years, rising from the manufacture of 3.9 million guns in 2000 to more than 11.3 million in 2020. In addition, powerful lobbying groups, including the National Rifle Association, spent nearly $5 million last year to expand gun rights while limiting curbs on who can have firearms and how they can carry it. Also, gun owners have become less likely to cite hunting or sport as a reason for their ownership, instead pointing to personal security. And despite widespread and vocal public outrage, American support for stricter gun laws in 2020 fell to the lowest level since 2014. According to polling by Gallup, only 52% of Americans surveyed said they wanted stricter gun laws, while 35% said they should remain the same. Over the last two decades, there has been a jump in the sale of high-caliber handguns and semi-automatic rifles. Figures from a Swiss-based research project named Small Arms Survey estimate that there were 390 million guns in circulation in 2018 in the U.S. Plus, the U.S. ratio of 120.5 firearms per 100 residents far surpasses that of other countries around the world. Secretary General of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, has slammed the French government's crackdown on protesters, saying Paris is violently silencing the voice of dissent.
France's heavy-handed crackdown on peaceful protesters proved the extent of its disregard for human rights. The French government violently silences the voice of dissent. Double standards vis-à-vis human rights have taken a new turn, or what?
Widespread protests erupted in Paris in the wake of a deadly shooting by a gunman at a Kurdish cultural center and nearby cafe on Friday in a busy part of Paris's 10th district.
If it's possible to enter a cultural center with a gun during the day, it means that there is not enough security. It's the kind of thing you only see in France. In other countries, it's not like that. There is no security.
Police arrested a 69-year-old suspect who the French authorities said had recently been freed from detention while awaiting trial for a saber attack on a migrant camp in the capital a year earlier. The attacker killed three people and injured three others. The suspect confessed to a pathological hatred for foreigners and spent nearly a day in a psychiatric facility before being returned to police custody on Sunday. Judicial officials in France have charged the man with murder and attempted murder because of race, ethnicity, nationality, or religion, as well as for the unauthorized procurement and possession of a weapon. The killings also drew Kurdish groups and their supporters onto the streets of Paris. Brimming with fury, the protesters, holding flags and chanting slogans, became disruptive at one point, broke the street railings, and set bins on fire, which led to clashes with police forces after they used tear gas and water cannons to scatter the indignant demonstrators. Police said there had been 11 arrests. Local media reports as well as witnesses said the French police spared no effort to quash the protests as they resorted to excessive use of force in what was literally construed as a heavy-handed crackdown on dissent. In reaction to the French police crackdown on demonstrators, Iran has urged the French government to respect the rights of protesters. In a statement, Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani urged the French law enforcement forces to exercise self-restraint while dealing with peaceful protesters. Kanani said the French government has a track record of dealing with protesters violently and a background of adopting discriminatory policies toward minorities and migrants. Between November 2018 and January 2019, at least 12 people died during the French security forces' crackdown on the Yellow Vest protests against the living and economic conditions across the European country. Friday's shooting drew Kurdish groups and their supporters onto the streets of the French capital, with some of the protesters waving flags of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, which is viewed as a terrorist organization by Turkey and its Western allies. Other protesters chanted anti-Turkey slogans and held banners with mottos accusing Ankara of being a killer state and connected to the shooting.
"We're obviously targeted by Turkey, by Erdogan's regime, as it was the case on January 9, 2013, during the triple murder of Kurdish activists. So today there is a second time, a repetition of history. Three people again were killed on the eve of the 10th anniversary, and so we reiterate again that for us there is no doubt that these are political assassinations orchestrated by Turkey."
The French ambassador was summoned after Ankara said French officials did little to stop the anti-Turkey propaganda promoted by the outlawed PKK militants in Paris. The ministry accused the PKK of spreading false information about Ankara's involvement in the shooting. It said the French government and some of its politicians are being used as a tool in this campaign. The ministry urged French authorities to properly look into the violent crimes committed by the terrorist organization. Over the past years, Turkey's relations with France have been stained by their opposing stances on the war in Syria and a range of other disputes. The PKK militants, designated as terrorists by Turkey, the United States, and European Union, regularly clash with Turkish forces in the Kurdish-dominated southeast of the country, which is attached to northern Iraq. A shaky ceasefire between the PKK and the Turkish government collapsed in July 2015. Attacks on Turkish security forces have soared ever since. More than 40,000 people have been killed during the three-decade conflict between Turkey and the autonomy-seeking militant group. Thousands of Moroccans have staged demonstrations across the North African country to reiterate their unwavering support for the Palestinian cause and voice outrage at the U.S.-sponsored normalization of diplomatic relations with Israel on its second anniversary. People from all strata of society heeded a call by the Moroccan Front in support of Palestine and against normalization, took part in nationwide rallies in almost 30 cities to show solidarity with Palestinians and censure Rabat's normalization of ties with the Tel Aviv regime. Protesters converged outside the Parliament of Morocco premises in the capital Rabat, where they chanted slogans in condemnation of denormalization and demanded the reversal of the agreement. The demonstrators waved national Palestinian flags and held up placards that read, "Normalization is treacherous and the struggle will carry on until denormalization is revoked" in Arabic. The participants also set fire to the Israeli flag in front of the legislature's building. The people of Morocco have repeatedly expressed their opposition to the agreement by holding demonstrations and protests. The Moroccan Front in support of Palestine and against normalization said normalization with the regime is passionately opposed by the whole country. On December 2020, Israel and Morocco announced the resumption of diplomatic relations after their suspension in 2000 following the outbreak of the Second Palestinian Intifada. The two agreed to normalize relations by signing a deal brokered by the U.S., making the North African country the fourth Arab state to strike such a deal with the regime. The others were the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Sudan. As part of the accord, Washington agreed to recognize Morocco's sovereignty over the Western Sahara region, which has been at the center of a dispute with neighboring Algeria. Algiers had condemned the U.S. decision, saying it had no legal effect because it contradicts UN resolutions, especially UN Security Council resolutions on Western Sahara. Morocco and Algeria have long been at odds over the disputed territory of Western Sahara, while Algiers-backed Polisario Front is seeking independence from Rabat's rule. Algeria cut diplomatic ties with Morocco in August 2021, citing hostile acts. Rabat controls over 80% of the territory and is pushing for autonomy under its sovereignty. The Polisario Front, however, wants a UN-sponsored referendum on self-determination. Morocco Morocco, like any other Arab country that has recognized Israel, insists it will still work for a two-state solution, but this time by engaging with Israel rather than boycotting it. Morocco clearly decided that developing its economic ties with Israel and winning U.S. recognition of its sovereignty in Western Sahara were too important to pass up. According to an opinion poll conducted by the Arab Barometer, 59% of Moroccans say they are hostile to normalization between Rabat and Tel Aviv. This shows a marked discrepancy between official authorities and Moroccan public opinion. The chasm was further exposed by the rise of several political parties that have accused the Moroccan state of betraying the Palestinian cause and collaborating with Israeli settlers. For example, the Justice and Development Party called for the closure of the Israeli liaison office during the bombing of Gaza last year. The Unified Socialist Party and the Socialist Democratic Vanguard Party showed their opposition to the rapprochement with Israel as well. They called it an illegitimate agreement. With all the opposition and outrage over inking the normalization agreement with Israel, why should Rabat do this? While the normalization was enacted in December 2020, bilateral relations between Morocco and Israel had never fully ceased in the past. In fact, in 2014, hundreds of diplomatic letters leaked by a Moroccan activist revealed that the two had been maintaining an ongoing political dialogue. Similarly, Israeli records reported $37 million in trade with Morocco in 2017, as well as signing of several trade and economic agreements. The diplomatic normalization was simply an opportunity for the kingdom to recognize and strengthen a cooperation that has always existed.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life for IRIB English Radio. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol, and one of my specialties is in enhancing the style for living. And my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic tradition. In this episode of the program, I am going to be going over trusting God in difficulties. Difficulty is an inseparable part of our life. Hardship is a part of our daily life, and we cannot keep them away from ourselves. There is not even one person who is 100% free from the hardship of this world. Now, what is the solution? Can we let these problems take our patience away? Can we run out of hope and tranquility? Of course not. When we believe that Allah is there, it should be enough for us. Then we have to trust Him. We need to realize that even the slightest thing in this world would never take place without the permission of Allah. Without the permission of God, even one leaf does not fall from the tree. No one and nothing can move and no good nor bad action would take place. This is a fact. Imam Sajjad, or fourth Imam, when he faces a hardship, says to Allah in one of his supplication, وَبِقُدْرَتِكَ أَوْلَدْتَهُ عَلَيَّ. O Allah, if I am stuck in this difficulty, you with your power decided to direct it to me. وَبِسُلْطَانِكَ وَجَّهْتَهُ إِلَيَّ. And with your mastery over everything, you allowed it to come to me. Then the Imam continues, وَلَا فَاتَحَ لِمَا أَغْلَقْتْ وَلَا مُغْلِقَ لِمَا فَتَحْتْ. No one can open what you has closed, and none can close what you has opened. وَلَا مُيَسَّرَ لِمَا عَسَّرْتْ. No one can make easy what you have made difficult. These are the facts. I recommend everyone to read the entire of this supplication, which is full of many monotheistic points. And the Imam accentuates on the fact that everything in this world is in the hands of Allah. If we have faced a severe difficulty, this difficulty did not come upon us without Allah's permission. Now let's have a glance over some verses of the Quran. We read in the story of the Israelites at the time of the Prophet Moses, when they escaped from the Pharaohs, or Pharaoh and his army, under the leadership of Moses, it was night. Pharaoh and his army learned about the escape of the Israelites and started chasing them. The Israelites suddenly reached the Nile River. It was really predicament, since they could not move forward because in front of them was water, and they could not run away to another place because the Pharaoh and his companions would reach them sooner or later. The hardest difficulty that could be ever met. When the Pharaoh and his army approached them, got near them, we read in the Quran, فَلَمَّا تَرَى الْجَمْعَانِ قَالَ أَصْحَابُ مُوسَى إِنَّا لَمُدْرَكُونَ. When the two hosts sighted each other, the companions of Moses said, indeed we are overtaken, we have been caught up. Now let's have a short break. I will be come back and continue talking about this story.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back to the program for a better life. We were talking about the Israelites at the time of Moses when they escaped and the Pharaoh reached them. They said, we have been caught up. But Moses, who had a complete trust in Allah, told them, Kalla inna ma'i rabbi sayahdeen. By no means, not at all. Verily my creator, Allah is with me. He will guide me. He will tell me what to do. Then we read in the following verses that Allah told Moses to strike the sea with his stick. So the sea was divided into two parts and the Israelites passed through it. Let me focus on this point, that the verses of the Quran and these verses indicate that God can offer a solution for us even in the most severe problems. The verses of the Quran are not only stories and storytelling, but also are for learning and understanding. As a result, we can also in difficulty should say, إِنَّ مَعِي رَبِّي سَيَهْدِينَ. Allah is indeed with us and never leaves us alone. Allah will show us the right path and the way of solution. Another example of trusting Allah in hardship is seen in the final part of Imam Hussein's life in Karbala, before he gets murdered. Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, in his final talk to Allah, and that moment when he was on the verge of martyrdom, and knew that as soon as he was martyred, the enemy would attack his household, the women of his family, and those who were with him, of women and kids in Karbala. The enemy would attack his children, would take them captive. At that time, when Imam Hussein's companions, friends, and his men and relatives were murdered, at a time when the thirst had reached its peak, you just imagine the situation, he addresses Allah with the words that shows his utmost patience and submission to Allah. Says, Sabran ala qadha'ika ya Rab, I am patient to what you have decreed, O my Creator. La ilaha siwak, there is no God but you. Ya ghiyath al-mustaghithin, O the only assistant for those who need help. Ma li rabbun siwak, there is no other owner, no other supervisor for me but you. The word Rab, which is one of the attributes of Allah, means the observant owner, a caring supervisor, supervisor of the universe. Here, when the Imam addresses Allah by this word, he wants to say that I know that all of these difficulties that I am facing is not out of your control. Here, the Imam considers Allah the owner and trainer, someone who is well aware of what is happening to his servant and what is good for him to happen, what is best for him, for his servant to face. Now, all the difficulties of Imam Hussein passed, but his name and his goal are widespread. His divine reward is high and his bilad has never been wasted. The conclusion is that we in difficulty have to trust Allah, have to be submissive to his decision. We should trust him, and we need to realize that what Allah decides is always in our favor, whether we realize the wisdom behind it or not. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
In recent years, gun violence in America has been one of the most critical challenges facing society. According to a recent analysis, gun-related deaths are the leading cause of death for American children and adolescents. We'll take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Website of AlertNet writes, the number of children shot and killed in the United States in 2022 exceeded 6,000. The Gun Violence Archive found that at least 6,032 children 17 years of age or younger had been the victims of America's deadly gun epidemic. That was the highest fatality rate since the Gun Violence Archive started keeping a record of gun violence casualties in 2014. The figure reflected a notable increase since last year, when arbitrary deployment of firearms by civilians was found to be responsible for around 5,700 casualties across the country. At least 306 children, 11 years old or younger, have been killed by gunfire, with 668 being injured. Additionally, 1,325 teenagers aged between 12 and 17 died by gunfire, with 3,732 being injured. Recently, the Gun Violence Archive said there had been a total of 609 mass shootings in 2022 in the United States. It is projected to reach around 675 by the end of this year. The grim statistics come after a 3-year-old girl in Kansas City, Missouri, was killed on Christmas Eve in what police suspect was an accidental shooting. The child shooting deaths in 2022 also include 19 students, all 11 years old or younger, killed in a mass shooting on 24th of May at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. One of the youngest victims killed by gunfire this year was a 5-month-old baby who was shot in the head while sitting in a car in Chicago, Illinois, during a 24th of June drive-by shooting incident. The United States has been suffering from an expanding trend of gun violence and episodes of mass shootings. In July, President Joe Biden admitted that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields. In October, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, released data on U.S. firearm deaths last year, counting over 47,000, which is the most in at least 40 years. The U.S. population is growing, but researchers say the rate of gun deaths has been getting worse. America's gun-related homicide and suicide rates both rose 8% last year, hitting unprecedented levels since the early 1990s. The New York Times has also covered the story. The gun death rate for children is nearly 5 in every 100,000. It was flat for more than a decade starting in 2000, and most years fewer than 3 in every 100,000 children were killed by guns. In 2014, the rate began to creep up, and by 2020, guns became the leading killer of American children. According to provisional statistics from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, last year was a particularly violent year. 3,597 children died by gunfire. The death rate from guns was the highest it has been in more than 20 years. While the statistics for this year are incomplete, it is clear that the carnage has not receded. In May of this year, the nation watched as horror unfolded in Uvalde, Texas. Yet another school ripped apart by bullets. Yet another group of children to mourn. Yet another shooting in a long line of school shootings. And though the number of school shootings has recently risen to the highest level on record, the overall picture is so much worse. These shootings account for less than 1% of the total gun deaths suffered by American children. No group of American children has been spared, but some have fared worse than others. Last year, nearly two-thirds of gun deaths involved children, 2,279, were homicides. Since 2018, they have increased by more than 73%. Most homicides involve black children, who make up a small share of all children, but shoulder the burden of gun violence more than any others, a disparity that is growing sharply. The number of children who die by suicide with a gun has also risen to a historical high over the last decade. Last year, suicides made up nearly 30% of child gun deaths, 1,078. Unlike homicides, suicides disproportionately involve white children, mostly teenage boys. A decade ago, the number of white children who killed themselves with a gun totaled around 500 annually. In three of the last 5 years, the figure has surpassed 700. The share of gun suicides for black and Hispanic children has been growing as well. Still, in America, among children who die by gunfire, black and Hispanic children are more likely to be killed by others, and white children are more likely to kill themselves. Gun accidents that kill children have also ticked up in the last decade, though they are relatively uncommon, totaling fewer than 150 in most years. Researchers who study gun violence say that it's difficult to explain exactly why gun deaths among children have risen so quickly, but most emphasize that the increased availability of guns, especially handguns, which tend to be used in homicides and suicides, and also tend to be stored less safely than some other types of guns, has most likely played a role. The website of Kaiser Family Foundation has also covered the same story. Firearm injuries and deaths in the United States have increased in recent years and adversely affect many children and adolescents. In 2020, firearms became the leading cause of death among children aged 19 and below, and in the first 6 months of 2022, there were over 300 mass shootings across the United States, including the shooting at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. In addition to physical harm, direct and indirect exposure to gun violence can never negatively affect the mental health and well-being of young people. During the pandemic, firearm-related deaths increased among children, with 7 children per day dying of firearms in 2021. From 2011 to 2021, nearly 18,500 children aged 17 and younger died by firearm. During this period, firearm death rates gradually rose until 2017, then slowed through 2019 before sharply rising in the first 2 years of the pandemic. From 2019 to 2021, the firearm death rate among children increased by 50%. This translates to 7 children per day dying by firearm in 2021. Throughout the past decade, assaults have accounted for at least half of all youth firearm deaths, while suicides by firearm have accounted for at least 3 in 10 of these deaths. The spike in youth firearm deaths during the pandemic have primarily been driven by gun assaults. Firearm-related injuries among children have also increased in recent years, from 9.9 per 100,000 population in 2010 to 15.5 per 100,000 population in 2020.
This is the show A to Z. For today's program, Brother Muhammad is going to talk to us about Islamic education. Stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's discussion with regards to Islamic education, we would like to look at an important aspect of the Islamic value system, which is the performance of salah, or the daily prayers. Now, this salah is not restricted to the daily prayers alone, but when it comes to the obligation of salah, it begins with the daily prayers. When we look at inculcating this and nurturing this aspect of the Islamic lifestyle into our children, we find salah to be a very important act of worship on one hand. But on the other side, we find that salah is something that cannot be forced, cannot be inculcated in one go. Rather, it needs to be nurtured over a span of time with patience, with perseverance, and with the right mixture of what to teach, what to inculcate, and at what time. And indeed, we find that at around the age of 6 years, the children need to be introduced to salah such that they start praying. Now, obviously, for boys and girls, there might be different expectations because girls become baligh and reach the age of maturity at 9, and boys become baligh around the age of 15. But in any case, the instructions from the Holy Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam is that the children need to be commended and enjoined towards salah around the age of 6. Now, there are certain principles that we as parents need to keep in mind when we go about teaching salah to our kids. And one of the very important principles of inculcating and nurturing salah is that the parents take it slow and gradual, and they do not pressure the children. Rather, they go forward in inculcating salah with ease for the children. So, number one, let's keep our expectations low at first. Let's introduce the very basic elements of salah, and thereafter build on them slowly and gradually. We find that in the human being, there are many capacities, but these capacities and potentials get nurtured and they flower over a span of time. And a child cannot be expected to reach perfect state of salah overnight or even in a week. The child needs to first be able to observe prayer being performed and thereafter try and emulate it in whatever way he or she can. And thereafter, once they reach that age, that at 6 years of age or so, between 5 and 7, on one hand, their internal God conscious, their godly innate conscience, the fitrah, is blooming, and they're feeling the urge to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on one hand. Their godly inclination is pushing them towards salah on one hand, and on the other hand, they're being taken by the hand and taught salah. Now, this is a very important stage, that if the child is pressured too much, the child may not be able to continue. But on the other hand, if the child is limited based on very few expectations, then again, the progress and the development, the spiritual progress and development of the child would be stinted. Therefore, the parents need to be very careful in balancing the nature of the child and the capacities that the child possesses with the slow and gradual process of inculcation and nurturing salah. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. Until next time, fi amanillah, under God's protection.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The United States of America is a country that suffers from violence and daily killing of its citizens. But in the last months of this year, 2022, the level of violence and the use of firearms by the American people against each other has reached a peak. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Hill newspaper gives us more detail. According to the non-profit organization Gun Violence Archive, there have been a total of 609 mass shootings in 2022 in the United States so far, putting the country on pace to reach around 675 by the end of this year. Last year saw a shocking 690 mass shootings across the United States, up from 610 in 2020, and 417 mass shootings in 2019. The Gun Violence Archive database researchers said on Wednesday, 23rd of November, the country is three mass shootings away from 2022 being the second highest yearly total since we began tracking data. By Thursday, the country was just two shootings away from that dark milestone. At least five people were killed and a dozen and a half injured in a mass shooting incident at a nightclub in the U.S. city of Colorado Springs recently, and six individuals were shot dead on Wednesday, 23rd of November, at a Walmart superstore in Chesapeake, Virginia. According to the Gun Violence Archive, a total of 39,820 people have so far lost their lives in gun violence incidents in the U.S. this year alone. Over 18,000 of deaths were homicides, while around 21,500 deaths were declared suicides. The Gun Violence Archive researchers said after the Colorado incident, Gun Violence Archive had never logged a month of 60-plus mass shootings before 2020. It happened five times in 2020, six times in 2021, and now six times again this year. According to Gun Violence Archive, the U.S. has experienced an average of 1.68 mass shooting incidents per day so far this year. The 2018 Small Arms Survey found that there were approximately 393 million firearms in civilian hands in the United States, or 120.5 firearms per 100 people. That number is much higher now, given the soaring increase in gun sales in the past few years. U.S. President Joe Biden in July admitted that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields and vowed to reinstate a ban on assault rifles. The remarks came in a White House ceremony to mark new gun control legislation that President Biden signed on 25th of June. Biden said, "This has taken too long with too much of a trail of bloodshed and carnage. The past many years, across our schools, places of worship, workplaces, stores, music festivals, nightclubs, and so many other everyday places, they have turned into killing fields. The Tehran Times has also covered the same story. Amid growing political polarization, more Americans are buying guns amid a climate of fear and insecurity. The United States has marked the third consecutive year that the country has registered more than 600 mass shooting incidents. The spike, documented by a prominent non-governmental organization, comes as a record number of Americans purchase guns amid a political landscape that fuels fears of violence amid growing polarization. The Gun Violence Archive has labeled mass shooting incidents as an American phenomenon and defines the deadly incidents as any attack in which there are at least four victims shot, injured, or murdered by a gun, but excluding the perpetrator of the attack. The latest statistics paints a disturbing picture of increasing gun violence in a country where there is so much political division that American news outlets are openly speaking about the dangers of a civil war. The latest figures have also been released as Donald Trump has announced his candidacy for a Republican presidential nomination in 2024, nearly 2 years after inspiring the deadly insurrection on Capitol Hill. The former president and his supporters strongly believe that the U.S. election was rigged in favor of his rival Joe Biden. Among Donald Trump's supporters are white supremacists and other armed extremist groups. Trump received more votes in the 2020 presidential election than he did in the 2016 presidential election. In 2020, the Republican candidate enjoyed the support of more than 70 million Americans, an indication of how many of the American public maintain support for Donald Trump's views and rhetoric. It also shows how polarized the United States has become. This is despite the many challenges facing Donald Trump, including the latest FBI raid on his Florida residence at Mar-a-Lago that angered his fan base, who have also expressed their strong belief in voter fraud in the last election. Experts say the deep divisions in the country, alongside the vast mass shooting incidents, will likely spark further turmoil in U.S. politics and potential violence among voters of the Republican and Democratic parties. The Insider website has also covered the same story and gives us more details. Following the Colorado shooting, President Joe Biden urged the country to address the public health epidemic of gun violence in all of its forms. President Biden said, "Earlier this year, I signed the most significant gun safety law in nearly three decades, in addition to taking other historic actions." It has been very clear that Biden's most significant gun safety law in nearly three decades has had no effect on the increasing figures of gun violence, as 2022 is set to go down in the history of the United States as a year during which the second highest number of mass shooting incidents took place. The other problem in the U.S. is that, with the National Rifle Association, NRA, an extremely powerful gun lobby in Congress that advocates for the right of U.S. citizens to carry weapons. Opinion surveys show that only 52% of the American public actually support any form of gun control. According to polling by Gallup, only 11% of the population say that gun laws should be made less strict. Experts say this shows an environment of insecurity and fear that Americans live in. Not only are Americans concerned about political violence and the future of their democracy, but also the rising rate of crime in the U.S. Gun ownership significantly increased over the last few years. Earlier this year, research by the Annals of Internal Medicine found that 7.5 million American adults, under 3% of the population, became the first new gun owners between January of 2019 and April of 2021. These are the latest statistics from the Gun Violence Archive as of 24th of November 2022. The total number of deaths as a result of gun violence that involved all causes stood at just shy of 40,000 deaths, with 39,845 incidents documented. Homicides, murders, and unintentional deaths stood at 18,197. Suicides using firearms stood at 21,648.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A few strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary. The Prophet asked those who had been wounded in Uhud that day to gather, and they did. He told them to go confront the enemy. The Muslims went, defeated them, and returned. So they returned with favor from Allah. They obtained a large amount of spoils from the battle, and no problem arose for them. They defeated the enemy and returned. This is a divine tradition. So, if in the face of the enemy's intimidation, you truly have faith that Allah is sufficient for us and He is an excellent trustee, and if you do your duty, this will be the outcome, the victory. This part of the chapter, Al-Imran tells us this tradition. This is what happened after the Battle of Uhud. Perhaps this was about a few hours after the end of the Battle of Uhud. The other case was related to the Battle of Uhud itself. In the Battle of Uhud, the Muslims were victorious in the beginning of the battle. First, they attacked and crushed the enemy. But when they neglected this strait because of worldliness, the situation became reversed.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Again, in chapter Al-Imran, the Quran states that And certainly Allah made good to you His promise. Chapter 3, verse 152. God fulfilled His promise to you. He had said, We promise that we will make you victorious if you struggle on the path of God. He carried out His promise. When you slew them by His permission. Chapter 3, verse 152. You were able to put pressure on the enemy and to defeat them due to God's grace. You succeeded in the beginning of the battle. So God did what He had promised in this part. God kept His promise to you. But what did you do next? instead of being thankful for this divine promise and giving thanks for this divine grace, until when you became weak-hearted, when your eyes saw the spoils of war and that some people were collecting the spoils, you became weak-hearted and you disputed about the affair. You started to argue and disagree with each other. You see, you must look at these Quranic phrases from a specific sociological viewpoint. See how a country, a state, a government can progress. And on the other hand, how it can be stopped and how it can fall.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Brits are still reeling from the impact of 2022. It's hard to recall a political year that's seen the country lurch from one crisis to the next, all bookended, it seems, by the saga of which particular Conservative Prime Minister was in charge. Boris Johnson had managed to cling on to power despite mounting evidence presented that his position had become untenable. His missteps during lockdown, dubbed Partygate, a faltering economy exacerbated by the outbreak of conflict in Ukraine, made his departure an inevitability. The race to replace him was brutal, exposing the deep divisions within the Conservatives. Party members chose Liz Truss over Sunak before, but that was only the beginning of the saga. Analyst Chris Bambury was following events closely and reflects on that period of chaos.
We had this strange interim where Liz Truss beat Sunak, clearly showing that a majority of the Conservative Party membership were not going to vote for Sunak for reasons which I think are fairly obvious, which are never really talked about. But Truss was a disaster. And then we ended up with Sunak being shoehorned into the Prime Ministership with no actual election.
I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
Ah, the blink and you'll miss it Truss era. 7 weeks of chaos which saw the pound take a hit and the markets recoil at the sheer ineptitude on political display. There was a sense that the UK's political landscape had now become a running joke.
The chaos of the Liz Truss premiership, you know, was just awesome. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in British politics. British politics is supposed to be about stability. It prides itself in selling itself, Britain, as a brand to the rest of the world, that has been politically stable. This was like Italian politics. You know, and the Prime Minister is just coming and going. This did not give a vision of Britain as a stable political entity.
Not content with topsy-turvy politics, the UK's longest-serving monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, passed away aged 96, leaving the UK contemplating its colonial legacy. With King Charles III with Camilla, Queen Consort, by his side, it was a new era, but one filled with old uncertainties.
I shall strive to follow the inspiring example I have been set in upholding constitutional government.